Welcome to Wham Bam Tram and a very happy new year. I'm James Ockenden, editor of Transit Jam, and we're here today in the studio with co-host Martin Turner, chairman of the Hong Kong Cycling Alliance, and our reporter Amelia Vogelzang. And we have a very special guest today. That's Professor Sylvia He, who's with the Urban Studies Program at the Department of Geography and Resource Management with CUHK. And we'll be talking transport resilience and urban design in just a moment. First, let's go take a look at the news. Okay, Martin, Happy New Year. And so what's the news?
There was recently an even bigger than usual roundup of people committing the heinous crime of riding a bike with a little motor on it. 26 people were arrested and had their machines taken for riding around the cycle paths or sometimes a pavement on an e-bike or an e-scooter or a monowheel. All these things are becoming so normal around the world. And yet in Hong Kong, the police are arresting the users.
I saw the police in the UK actually put out an announcement before Christmas saying, don't make us the bad guys. Don't buy e-scooters for your loved ones. They're illegal. Now, that was quite interesting. The police were saying, you know, it was not their fault. They're just enforcing the law. Do you think that's the case in Hong Kong?
Well, of course, there's always that as an element. But the police make a lot of decisions about where they're going to prioritise. And clearly, they are now gunning for people riding e-bikes. And there are a lot in Hong Kong. There are a lot of people that are riding these things. And elsewhere, what we tend to see, and I include China as a major example here, new technologies such as e-bikes, such as share bikes, are allowed to take root. And the government takes a step back and sees how people are using what is clearly, you know, a publicly popular mode. And then they only bring in policies and rules a little later when it's clear what's going on. Why can't Hong Kong do that?
Interesting, Martin, the variety of e-mobility devices confiscated in that bust. There was 15 electric bicycles and 7 electric scooters. They're kind of the classics. 3 electric monowheels, which are really raising their profile now in Hong Kong, which I think is quite interesting. And the diversity is pretty interesting, considering the government treats them all as one class.
It's very creative. Yeah. I wish we could see this blossom and work out a better way to get around our compact and crowded city. These seem to be part of the answer, not a problem. The news is, government, as wooden-headed government, has head in sand, simply says stop to all new stuff.
Now, Amelia's here on her roller skates. So we're talking about diversity of personal transport. Amelia's on 8 wheels. How does that go in Hong Kong, Amelia?
I mean, I'd love to be able to, like, transport myself between places on them. But it's just, I wouldn't feel comfortable on the roads because I'm not that fast. And, you know, if you go against the traffic, then the gravel has been smoothed in the other way. So it's pretty bumpy. And lots of places, well, I mean, I've only tried to go to one place. I tried to go to a toilet on my roller skates because that's the best place to go. And they just told me, no, I couldn't get in with my skates, and they made me take them off.
Oh, no way. A public toilet in Hong Kong?
It was a LCSD facility.
No skates allowed.
No.
But I really want to go.
Yeah.
So did that put you off roller skating?
Not really, okay. To be honest.
Okay, well, that's great. So what would it take? You know, what changes would you like to see to actually become sort of roller skating your first last mile between public transport, for example?
I suppose the biggest thing is just taking the time to put on my roller skates and, like, my wrist guards and my knee pads, and then taking them off as well. And so, like, if I didn't have to put them on and take them off so often, that would be great. I've seen people online in, like, California, and I'm very jealous of them because they'll just, like, roller skate into, like, shops and just around, and they're just, like, their whole day is just on their skates.
You don't think you could wear them in a shop in Hong Kong?
No, definitely not.
No.
I would love to, though.
Yeah, perhaps you should just do it and, you know, become a scofflaw.
Yeah.
We'll bail you out. We have experience with that, don't we, Martin?
We do.
Okay, well, we got a bit off topic there, from e-mobility to roller skating into toilets. But it's really all the same thing. We have a pretty good public transport network in Hong Kong. But how do people actually get around, or how do they want to get around, between those transport nodes? I predict right now, early prediction on January the 1st, personal mobility and its connection with public transport and the city will be one of the biggest topics of 2022. So let's welcome our guest, Sylvia. Sylvia He is a prolific urban researcher. She's written papers and reports on transport resilience, attitudes to the MTR and violence during the 2019 unrest, promoting e-mobility in Hong Kong, and assessing spatial planning in terms of transport mobility and work-life balance. So let's welcome Sylvia to Wham Bam Tram. Okay, welcome, Sylvia. So you've done some very interesting research on behalf of the government, looking at what happened in 2019. Was kind of a unique experience, we can say, from Hong Kong, and looking at it more positively, it was a chance to really explore the resilience of the transport network. Can you perhaps explain to us a little bit about the research and what you found?
Okay, thanks, James. This is a project funded by PICO back in 2019. It's actually a special round funded by the government, particularly want to address the social tension between the youth, between the social movement, and how the government can address this tension. And then my particular project looks into the transport system, what we can do to make the transport system more resilient in this type of social movement event. Because in the past, the MTR system as the transport system's backbone, as well as the bus system in Hong Kong, has been very reliable. And this is sort of the first time we experience or witness major disruption in the system. And not only to our daily mobility, but also to the economy. In this report, we try to examine what we can do in the future to make our system more reliable, and more fundamentally to see whether there's a connection between people's political stance and whether they support or not these kind of disruption in the system. And indeed, we surprisingly find that there's a strong connection between people's political stance and whether they are public acceptance of this disruption. And so based on that, we also propose a number of policy recommendations, what we can do or the government can do to address this issue in the future in case it happens again.
Now, in terms of mode, I mean, I saw something quite incredible. You know, we would see streams of people walking along Cane Road and then Bonham Road to get to mid-levels. I mean, literally, it was like a parade. It was like the Halloween parade. So many people coming from Central and realizing, actually, it's not that hard to walk from there. And I guess that many people do that normally. So did we see any sort of fundamental mode shift which then carried on after that?
I think for fundamental, it would be not so much. I actually also tried to walk from Sitch K back to Ma An Shan once, in the day where I cannot find any public transport running, I cannot find any taxi. So it took me 45 minutes to walk from Sitch K back to Ma An Shan. But it's also a trigger point if you want to try other alternative modes. So I think some people, if they realize, oh, walking and cycling is not too bad, and we don't have to rely on MTR or bus like they used to, people can actually carry on these transport modes if they like to. And connected to COVID-19, actually, another survey we conducted related to COVID, we realized that during the COVID, people tend to enjoy personalized modes, such as walking, cycling, or even e-scooters.
Yeah, interesting. You mentioned individual transport modes there, cycling, walking. I mean, I come from a cycling background, so I tend to see the world through that perspective. Personally, my experience during 2019 was I didn't have any troubles. There was no disruption because I cycle everywhere. You're travelling between CUHK and Ma An Shan. A bike is surely an excellent way to get across there. You say 45 minutes to walk. It's probably more like 10 minutes to ride a bike. But moving back to the urban areas, did you consider the policy benefits of encouraging cycling as a form of resilience? If modal share for cycling here was rising like we see in most other cities, would we see perhaps a capacity for cycling that was up in the high double digits?
I totally agree with you. I think Hong Kong has potential to further push the cycling behaviour. I used to cycle as well, and 20 minutes. But because there's not enough parking space in my housing estate. It's my own personal story. Then I have to park outside my housing estate, and then even my secondhand bike got stolen. So now I have to take public transport. And even in the urban area, I think there's potential. May not be a wide range of promoting cycling due to the limited urban space, but still in certain neighborhood, I think there is some potential. Unfortunately, the government seems not very pushing this travel mode.
Unfortunate indeed.
Do you think your research about the more personal choices, so not just cycling, but walking, cycling, e-scooters, do you think the government took any notice of that?
I think the walking definitely got government, yes. As far as I know, the transport department has a unit to address the walkability in downtown area.
But they don't do much, do they? Let's be honest.
Not that much as we wish they should, right? So, and also e-scooters, the government has been quite slow in making it fully legalized. Next year, there will be a new pilot scheme. From Science Park to CHK, there will be this e-scooter route.
This is news?
Yeah.
When did you find out about this?
I organized a low-carbon transport workshop in early November, and I invited some of my friends joining as participants. And one of them is actually Boris Im, having an e-scooter startup in Science Park, and he's been working with the government to experience and legalize e-scooter, at least exploring the flexibility.
They have kept that quiet.
I mean, with the e-scooter trials, like the bike paths, we know we've discussed before, they're pretty inefficient. When you come to a road, you have to stop, and if the route is not so direct, you still have to follow it anyways. So with these e-scooter trails, do you think this kind of like inefficiency or impracticality can be avoided?
So far in Hong Kong, I think the trial of the e-scooters mainly just follow the bicycle lane, so they don't have a separate right-of-way. And so I think what you mentioned is just the current design of the cycling lane in Hong Kong. And so I think the government has been trying to connect the different cycling lanes in the new territories, but not so much effort to maybe address your issue about whether they have to stop and get off their e-scooters or get off the bike to ensure more smooth cycling experience. And especially in the urban areas, when there's no dedicated cycling lane, it would be also very difficult for, say, e-scooter users to try in urban areas.
Yeah. Let's connect the dots a bit here because the government paid for a study into transport and transport resilience and has paid for study into transport and COVID resilience. And yet nothing really seems to have changed. So where is all this research? I know Becky Liu at Hong Kong U also did a study funded by PICO, which was excellent, which I think also said the same sort of thing, which was we rely too much on rail as a backbone and we need to sort of broaden and diversify our transport. So where is all this research? It's great work that you're all doing, but where is it all going? Is it just sitting in a drawer at PICO?
I wish not. I wish the government can really take a more a serious study of our research and also mobilize different government units to work together. So far, maybe one report can actually make recommendations for different government units to work. Transport Department, Planning Department, and LCSD, etc. But so far, I think the government has been working in a silo pattern. So we wish they can have more roundtable discussion, a workshop, etc., and also invite stakeholders to
and experts like yourself.
Thank you to talk about and they have a more open discussion.
And since we're talking about these new individual modes, do you see that there's a role, and do you see any sign of the government adjusting how they portray the roads as being used, owned and shared? Motor vehicle users at the moment often see themselves as the users of the roads, but when more and more people are using these light electric individual modes, cycling, Is there a need for a change, and do you see one coming in terms of how we see our roads?
It's a very good question. And indeed, I think the mentality, I think the car users in Hong Kong also need to change. Because in overseas, you usually see car users give priority to pedestrians and cyclists. But in Hong Kong, that is the other way around. It's a kind of like the priority, the hierarchy in Hong Kong is very different. And so it's indeed linked to how people perceive the space. It's actually a common. People own the urban space altogether, rather than given a certain group, like the higher income group have higher priority of using it. That is not good or not true. So we need to, I think, work together to change this mentality, or maybe more education, like media, these young groups can have more education initiative and educating people. And also the road users, they also need to think about what is the best for our environment, what is the best for the social and people's mental health, because there's a lot of research in public health and urban planning that when people have good access to the green area, to the blue area, and could have more physical activity, it's good for their health, mental health and physical health. And so if the government can allocate more urban space to accommodate different travel patterns and different trips, it would be good.
Would you say perhaps that the context here is our use of public space? We have limited space, especially within the urban areas, and perhaps that should be treated as a framework for how we develop the city and the transport systems. Look at the gross amount of space and then how much we give to travel lanes, bus-only lanes, on-street parking, and let's not forget pedestrians, which form the vast majority of people moving around our city.
Yeah, that's true. I think the public space is a very good perspective. It, in a sense, you can see that the MTR is also a space. It's a public space. People have been using it. And how we treat this space, ensure it's a safe and also a smooth or livable space. And the city, I think, need to think about how to ensure the equity, allocating the space across different age group, different income group, and group who prefer different travel modes. So I think this is a perspective that can invite more efforts, interdisciplinary effort. So not just transport experts, but also urban planners, urban designers, and creative industry, etc. They can all come together to design our space to make it more attractive and for particular transport mode.
And do you see any possibility of the government moving to look at the development of Hong Kong in that way, through that line?
There is opportunity. For example, the West Kowloon district and also the central promenade area. In certain new areas, this project, the government tried to make it more pedestrian friendly or cyclist friendly, but wide scale, the whole territory wise, I think there more effort can be made.
Well, I mean, if M Plus is an example of the government trying to make things more pedestrian friendly, then we've got a big problem on our hands, because we've actually done some research there recently to show that overwhelmingly people arrive there by car or taxi, because walking there is a real challenge. And so I tried to cycle there. You cannot legally cycle there from anywhere. And walking there, you still have to sort of teeter along this hard shoulder, because they still haven't put a proper path in for people. And the excuse is, well, it's not finished yet. But the museum is finished. The museum is full of art. And yet there's still no path to walk there. I mean, is that really a good example?
I think the government has a vision to improve it. I don't know how long the government will take. The accessibility, especially the pedestrian accessibility, is a very good direction to go. Indeed, one of my current projects is about in a new towns area. What are the walking accessibility to different social, leisure, and recreational activities? And we find that in new towns, actually the walking accessibility is not as high as the urban area. So it's kind of reflecting if the government want to further develop the, say, the northern metropolis area, then I think there's a big project going behind how to promote the active transport mode in these new towns and new development areas.
Okay, Sylvia, we have unfortunately run out of time, so we're going to have to say goodbye. We hope to see you at the e-scooter trials you talked about. Will you be taking part in those?
I wish so.
Okay, so we can perhaps maybe borrow some e-scooter from your friend to come and try those out?
Absolutely, I will get you connected.
Okay, I'd love to do a Wham Bam Tram episode from behind the wheel or the handlebars of an e-scooter. That would be a great episode, I think.
Looking
Are you up for that, Martin?
That would be great.
Amelia?
Yeah.
Okay, Amelia's on board too, so
let's do it.
Let's do it. Thanks very much, Sylvia.
Thank you, we'll talk to
you again soon.
Thank you, James. Thank you.
Thanks, Sylvia, and thanks, Martin and Amelia. And that's the end of Wham Bam Tram Season 2. We had a 13-week contract and it's flown by. Saturday nights are going to be so lonely now. And in the meantime, we'll be developing the Wham Bam Tram podcast. So please look out for that. Thanks to our producers. Thanks to Alan at RTHK under the Community Involvement Broadcast Scheme. Thanks to Bobo in the studio in Mongkok. And of course, thanks to all our guests, co-hosts, supporters, and listeners. It's been an honour. Thanks very much, and we hope to see you soon.